Butcher about interviewing you for a bonus baby book?
Oh, yeah.
We need you. We need you.
Okay. First, let me say I appreciate this very much. I know it takes time away from your evening, but all the help I can get, I do really appreciate. I'll ask you, 12, 14 questions. And if you would please answer them as short or as long as you want to. If you don't want to answer something, don't. Pardon me?
Okay.
And if, you know, if you feel you want to add something, by all means, please do.
Sure.
Okay. Your bonus was announced at $40,000. Was that what it actually was?
Let me think. You know, it's been so long, I have to think about that.
Sure.
I think it was 50 over 3 years.
Okay, including your major league salary?
No.
The salary was on top of that?
Yeah.
Okay. Each one seems to have been done a little bit differently, and almost to a man, the ones I've talked to, the announced bonus and the actual bonus were different.
Yeah, it's, there were, my comment on that is when I was doing well, it was $60,000. When I was doing not so well, it was $40,000. It seemed that. Seem to have a slightly floating aspect to
it. Try to make themselves look good and cover all bases, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you were one of only two bonus babies the Yankees signed, you and Frank Legia. But there was rampant talk then and still now of the Yankees paying money under the table to boys and then sending them to the minor leagues. Were you aware of that, or did you hear of any of that?
I was not aware of it, and I doubt it very much.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was offered under-the-table deals by at least one other club, and it was not the Yankees.
Hmm. Okay.
The Phillies
were very active in pursuing. They didn't really sign that many, but they sure did chase a lot of boys. Did the Red Sox pursue you?
Yes. In fact, they were the earliest team that offered.
Evidently, and this I have not been able to get a definitive answer to, but from talking to several of you fellows, the Red Sox were extremely active, but Lou Boudreau did not want bonus babies. And for that reason, they pursued, but that's all they did in most cases. He discouraged it so much.
Yeah, well, I thought I played most of my Sandlot ball on Long Island, and I thought they were very active in scouting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it was a Red Sox scout was the first scout to talk to me when I was about 14 or 15. And over the years, there were several others that took looks at. I don't think Boudreau was managing the Red Sox.
In 55, it was Pinky Higgins.
Yeah.
But he had managed the year of 53 and 54 when this bonus rule went into effect.
Right.
And that's when, they pretty much carried through. He set a precedent for the team. Although, I think almost to a man of the 20 or 25 of you fellows I've spoken with, no, I'm not the man, 20, the Red Sox were there, at least in the hunt, at one time or another.
Oh, they were very much in the hunt with me. In fact, I would say they and the Tigers were the most active.
Who were the scouts? Do you remember any of the scouts who scouted you?
Oh, yeah, I do. Not all of them, but... In fact, I can't remember the Red Sox scouts, but there were a couple of them. Joe LeBate was the name of the scout from the Phillies. And
I met everybody there from him until the director of scouting got to the farm, the general manager, the carpenter.
Why did you not sign with the Phillies with the push they put on?
Well, what the deal they offered me was they would give me a scholarship to the college of my choice, and then they would sign me to a minor league contract, and they would make up the difference between a certain set bonus, a large bonus under the table. Hey, that I was a very straight arrow. I didn't like the whole proposal, And I had, in effect, the college of my choice through other scouts, other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have much of a deal for me. Frankly, in those days, kids made. They were 17 years old, and it's very different from today, in which kids coming out of college at 21, he's got a college education, he's mature, and he's very dollar-oriented, and he's got lots of professional and semi-professional advice, financial swamis around, and they make a very cold and calculating decision on where they're going to get to play first and all this. I signed with the Yankees because I was a Yankee fan. I mean, I signed with the Yankees for less money than I would have gotten from the Cubs or from the Tigers, and I think from the Red Sox.
I think a couple of other boys have told me that they signed with the team they liked, and it may have cost them, in one case, I think, $30,000. I believe Jim Small said he signed for $30,000 less to join the Tigers.
No question in my mind that it cost me. I would have, the Tigers had four or five bonus players playing. I couldn't even get. I could barely get in the game as a pinch runner. it was just a difference. And I wasn't even played my first year in games that were either laughers or, totally out of reach or whatever.
Well, going to a team with the Yankees ability, with the Yankees record, it figured that you would get a lot less playing time than if you went. The Tigers at that time were best middle of the pack.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, I was going to take anybody's job or share time with anybody, but, it's roughly equivalent to a college coach these days, playing second or third string quarterback when the score is, 45-0 one way or the other.
Right.
The other teams, seem to me, did that kind of thing. Stengel really didn't do it. I mean, I pinch ran, maybe 15 times the first season. Did not play, did not get up until he clinched the pennant in Boston on a Saturday. And then there was the last game of the season, at 55, a doubleheader against her, so I played the doubleheader. and went 1-for-3 at each game. So I was 300 hitter for the year, which surprised one Sunday afternoon.
Well, there's a lot of guys that played that and less than that 300. That's all right.
So, I did play considerably more the next year in 56, but I'm sure it was the furthest thing from Stengel's mind, But the attitude was quite different at Detroit. People like, what was his name, Reno Bertoia, not ready. K-Line was ready, but there were several other people there, the Tigers, that were not ready, but they got to play regularly, which of course was out of the question with the Yankees. So hopefully there would have been something, you know, right there.
Well, the Tigers lineup, the bonus boys were maybe not as good as the players playing, but there wasn't that great a difference. In the Yankees lineup, there would have been a big difference for the kid.
No, I'm not talking about starting or anything. I'm talking about going into the eighth inning, which happened a little next year.
You know? Yeah, pick up stuff.
Going in and play one inning in the field for somebody to pitch hit for, something like that.
Yeah. How many teams altogether do you think were after you? Did you ever count, or did you know?
There were 14 of the 16.
Who didn't show up?
Teams. I'm trying to think now who it was, but I'll tell you one thing: the Yankees were the 14th team. The guy that you can believe that.
Well, they didn't. They did not pursue.
They just weren't very. They weren't very good. They were incredibly overrated on their scouting. And this goes back to the point I was making earlier, that many, many kids signed with them because of the pinstripes, Joe DiMaggio, Babe Ruth, and Miller Huggins, and, you know, the whole aura, the whole mystique of being a Yankee. Actually, what happened, the way I got signed by the Yankees is the following. It says a lot about the scouting. First of all, I played all my baseball within a 40-minute drive of Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, much of it much closer than that. And by the time I was contacted when I was 15 years old by about three or four different scouts, Giants, Dodgers, Red Sox, the Phillies, and the Indians. By the time I was 16, I'd been contacted by a whole bunch of scouts. By the time I was 17, and I was a senior in high school, they were flying me out to Detroit, flying me here, and, you know, bringing me down to Reading to work out with the Indian farm team. I've been playing semi-pro ball over in Jersey for a Dodger bird dog scout, Turk Karam, the guy that used to sign everybody up for the Topps bubblegum cards.
Mm-hmm.
Great old guy. And I was playing with him. And a Giant scout started arranging scholarships to high school, to college, rather. And I had all kinds of offers to go to various colleges, actually throughout the country, on athletic scholarships that were arranged by scouts, by professional scouts. Baseball scholarship to Notre Dame was arranged by this Giant scout. I had a very close relationship with the Dodgers and played, when I was 16, I played on what was the successor team to what they used to call Brooklyn Against the World, if you've ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
The scouting vehicle. I mean, they took a lot of kids that had graduated. College and formed a team, Brooklyn Dodger scout team, tour these kids through England, playing various semi-pro teams up there. What the Dodgers got out of was a very good look at people they thought were prospects, you know. I met at camp in Arizona. Dozens of Dodger scouts, and worked out at Giant Stadium at the Polo Grounds, Giants were still at the Polo Grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Worked out at Evans Field all the time. And went out to Notre Dame. I graduated when I was only 17 when I graduated from high school. And I graduated, it was still in the New York system when I graduated a year. So I went out to Notre Dame on a baseball scholarship. And still had never heard from the Yankees and was sort of really perplexed and puzzled about this and figured, well, I just, everybody else was, you know, lusting after me, but I guess I just wasn't good enough for the Yankees kind of thing. And I had a godfather who was an old semi-pro pitcher. He had a friend. He pitched for the fire department, you know, in New York. And he had a friend in the ticket office at Yankee Stadium. And being my godfather, he was aware of baseball. And he was aware of all the offers and scouts coming around. He said, what the hell's going on? Everybody seems to be, you know, really interested. My godson, but the Yankees don't seem to be interested at all. So based on this, I got, shortly after I went to Notre Dame, which was January of 54, I got a little postcard in the mail, I'll never forget it. It was called an application for tryout.
No kidding.
Yankee Stadium. I thought this was pretty funny because, you know, you had all these other guys, you know, fawning over you and chasing you and entertaining you. And I used to get paid in New Jersey for the semi-pro ball, which was a big thing to, you know, a 15-year-old kid.
Sure.
And, so it was an application for a tryout. There was a letter with it that sent this card back. I said, well, that's pretty haughty, you know. So it was timed. It was a tryout. It was like a three-day tryout. And it was timed during the college Easter vacation. So anyway, I went to this tryout at Yankee Stadium. And they really liked me all of a sudden. And I had already assigned to play in a semi-pro league that summer up in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I was going up there, I was playing for the Jeremy Dallas, played for the Phillies, for the Dodgers, I forgot. Paul Critchell, the famous Yankee scout, was in charge of all the scouts, or a half dozen scouts, Yankee scouts in his workout. And he called me over and introduced me to a guy by the name of Bob Decker, who was a Yankee bird dog, who was managing the Halifax Cardinals on the 16th of the week in Scotia. Critchell kind of just insisted that I go up to this league, which I was going to anyway, with this Halifax team rather than the other team I was going to, or was tentatively going to. And you got paid up there in Canadian dollars, which at that time was American dollars. So I liked Decker and Critchell, you know, and I was flattered at last that the Yankees were expressing some interest. And I went up there that summer of 54, and had a good year up there, and all kinds of teams were, you know, interested in signing me. Off of that season. The Yankees were very interested in me, but they were begging and pleading with me to hold off a year because they had Legion. Legion was kind of, they had been on the team 1 year and they were coming back, even coming back for a second quarter of the year, and they didn't want to carry two bonus players. The Major League owners at their meeting in July of the All-Star game, summer of 54 had passed a rule, which, you know, they used to make up the rules as they went along.
Right.
And then they would cheat on their rules that they made them. So they would constantly be recycling these rules and putting in new rules and revoking old ones. But one of they put in 54, it was funny, was they were under some pressure because they'd signed, they were just starting to sign people out of college. Signed a couple of college players who were halfway through college, and they received some criticism. So I don't know what really provoked it. It's kind of laughable in retrospect. They put in a rule that they would not, they would sort of have equivalent to what the NFL had at the time of not signing a college player once he started his sophomore year. His class graduated, you know, so it's sort of non-tampering. That was what I was facing, and I was starting the second semester freshman at that fall. In January, I started my sophomore year, so I was facing that. What I thought was that sort of Rubicon. Where I either have to sign before I started my sophomore year or have to wait until I graduated from college, which I never intended to do when I went to college. I intended to go no more than 2 years, sign and then finish my college degree. So I was playing ball. The Yankees, that fall, I just made up my mind that I was going to sign. Tigers, Cubs, and the Red Sox, and the Indians were very interested in doing that. And the Yankees, while they dithered about it, they eventually, you know, came through with when they saw that I was going to sign. So I signed with them for less money than I would have gotten from the Tigers.
And so you never played ball for Notre Dame?
I played freshman ball.
Right, but not... you were ineligible for the varsity back in those days.
And it was, you know, it wasn't much of a schedule. I think it was like 10 games.
Yeah. Where did you go to high school?
I went to a Catholic school in Brooklyn called Bishop Lockwood.
Okay. Do they have your high school record by any chance?
Oh, I don't know.
Very few. Most of the times the schools back then kept a scorebook and usually lost it as soon as the game was over. It's been very hard kicking them out. Okay, you continued.
Yeah, we won. In my junior year, we won the city championship, Catholic city championship. We didn't have it next month.
Yeah.
Fordham Prep in Ebbets Field for junior.
Were you an infielder the whole time?
Yeah, I was a shortstop.
Did you continue to Notre? You did continue and got your degree, obviously.
Yes.
How long did it take you?
It took me from January of 54 to June of 1961. Even though I did it in seven semesters, because I played winter ball 1 year, I was in the Army another year. So.
Okay.
And after my first two consecutive semesters, which were
then I went back 3 fall semesters. Then I was out of school completely for winter ball in Maritime. As well, I went here for the Army Reserve Academy. Then I came back. I had 5 semesters. And I came back and stayed for a whole school year coming.
What is your degree?
I have an undergraduate degree in history with about 15 hours of graduate work that I took towards my undergraduate degree. So I've got a history major with a minor in international relations.
And well, you made a living, you went in the diplomatic service?
Yeah. I was actually in the intelligence community.
Till what, recently, right?
No, till I retired at the end of 1987.
Okay, well, that's recent. That's a pretty interesting career, I would imagine.
Yeah, most of it was overseas. Two of my 4 children were born overseas.
So now you're living a life of ease, huh?
Hmm?
You're living a life of ease now?
No, I'm working full-time. I'm a managing director of an international security consulting company called Colombo Partners.
Good. I'm glad people continue to work. We're getting off the subject. Do you know whose roster spot you took when you joined the Yankees?
Roster spot?
Yeah. If somebody had to go, unless you joined the team after September 1st, but I don't think you did.
You never take anybody's particular roster spot. You know, there were 40 people on a major league roster and 25 after cutdown day.
Right.
And since people are retiring and people are coming up and going down, I mean, you know, there's not a spot that I took. I mean, somebody wasn't with the Yankees that year that would have been if I wasn't there. But
you joined the Yankees in spring training?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you joined the Yankees in the season. I've tried to find this, and it's very difficult to find.
I signed immediately after that fall semester, which in those days was over around the third week of January.
Mm-hmm.
I had a big press conference in New York, and I was, they had Rizzuto at it. He was supposedly signed to replace him. And 35 years later, he's still there.
That's right. I interviewed him a couple of years ago. He was a very nice fellow.
He was cut halfway through that season. He was released.
Yeah. Well, he'd been there since 1940 or something.
Oh, yeah. Very nice man.
You know, the boys who joined the team, they signed after they got out of high school or after a year of college and joined the team in June or July. Somebody had to go at that point.
Oh, yeah. No, this was, I went to spring training. I just don't have no idea.
Well, nobody, yeah, you're coming out of spring training, nobody went. What kind of reception did you receive from your teammates?
I received a relatively very good reception. I mean, there was, a certain amount of good-natured kidding. Most of the infielders were, Rizzuto, Coleman, Martin, McDougal, Collins, were very friendly and outgoing and helpful. I would say I got a frosty reception from Hank Bauer,
mm-hmm.
who I don't think, big tough Marine and you know, got to the major leagues very late. And here's these kids, you know, coming in and getting big money and, you know, getting it on silver platters and that type of thing. Got a good reception from Mickey Mantle. Very nice. I was roommates with Tom Sterling, a very good friend.
Was Slaughter there?
Slaughter wasn't there. He came over much later. In fact, I think he came over in 56.
He'd been there and gone at that point.
Hmm?
He had been there and then had gone and then came back.
Really?
Yeah, he came over from the Cardinals, I think, in 53. And then went to Kansas City, but I wasn't sure what year he'd done that.
Yeah, no, I don't think he'd been with the Yankees before he came over in my time.
Let me look. I've got the book here.
Yeah.
Dick Schofield, when he signed with the Cardinals, Slaughter was there, and he was very rough on him. Okay, Slaughter came to the Yankees in 54 and 55. Started 55, went to Kansas City, came back at the end of 56.
Yeah.
So he played with them in 54.
Okay, well, he came back in, I just remember in 56. I was semi-established there. He didn't give me any trouble.
Right.
He was a jerk.
Then you say the teammates were helpful to the
Yogi was in his own little world, and I'd say Terry was in his own world, and Rizzuto. Rizzuto was very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking places with
him. This is one thing some of the fellows have told me. First one that mentioned it was Jim Small. He said he'd been living at home in high school, and he had to be home by 9 o'clock every night. And all of a sudden, he signed with the Tigers and joined. I think he joined them in New York. He said 3 days left, he got out of high school. There were people standing there with their hands out, wanting tips and asking him things and telling him things. He said the adjustment was just absolutely overwhelming to him. But you were a city boy. Did you find it such?
No, I didn't have. I was a city boy. And, I had followed the Yankees very closely. I mean, I think most bonus players feel like imposters, you know. I had decided when I was in third grade that I was going to be a major league baseball player. I started reading sports news. Very hard and working on that towards sort of way down the pike, and all of a sudden, bam, I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong here. I haven't had that great year in C-ball, and then, you know, had two, you know, 4 years in A and, you know, triple A. So there was that aspect to it, but, I don't know. But I was kind of always a little bit old for my age. So the adjustment from that point of view wasn't tough. In fact, I was kind of amazed at how childlike some of these older ball players.
Get them on the bench.
And they were pretty childlike. As a for instance, I remember one time we were over in Miami during spring training. I think it was 56, and it was Sturdivant was my regular roommate, and we checked into a hotel in Miami. We were playing, I think the Orioles used to play in Miami in those days, and we come over by bus and we checked in at a hotel in downtown. Sturdivant and I went out to dinner, and looking around, we were out for a couple hours. We came back, and we weren't aware of it, but Martin and Mantle were, who were roommates, were in the adjoining room. You know, the way the hotels are set up, it's usually adjoining.
Right.
To and we had left our door unlocked, or they had found our door unlocked, and Sturdivant and Mantle were good friends. They were both Oklahomans and were all friendly. Anyway, it's a joke, just sort of, you know, they were kind of big kids. They had, we had a very big room in our suitcases. And so they had gotten into our room, and they must have spent an hour and a half of very hard physical labor. They, as a joke, they had taken all the furniture in the room, the bed, the pictures, and all the furnishings, and they stacked them up in one big pile. In the middle of the room. But, you know, this thing must have taken them an hour to do this, you know. So, you know, it raises certain questions about the, you know, the maturity.
Yes. Well, you're on the road, you're bored, you got to do something.
Yeah.
That's funny. What the players helped you? Did you have any coaching? The Yankees always had a reputation for having coaches who actually coached. Most of the teams in those days, the coaches were somebody's friend or something that had the job because they couldn't do anything else. What was the situation in New York?
Well, there were, let me think, there were, you know, the two principal coaches were Crescenti, who was the third base coach, and Dickey, who was the first base coach, sort of co-tabby catcher's coach.
Right.
They were both very serious, professional, full-time coaches. Dickey was a fairly quiet guy. Very nice man, and he was very helpful to me, very friendly. As a matter of fact, I have a story to tell you. Was it Friday? I live in Miami Beach here because it's close to my office.
Uh-huh.
We have a house that backs up on a golf course here called, of course, Country Club. And I'm a social member, not a golfer. I was over on the Bay of Driving Range. It's a country club. I was over in the hitting balls. I guess it was the day after Christmas, and it was kind of a gray, rainy day here. And there was only one other guy on the driving range. And I'm hitting balls, and an older man comes along with a yellow sweater on, who I immediately recognize as my only hero other than my father, a man by the name of Joe DiMaggio.
Oh, yeah, I heard he's living in Florida now.
And he comes up and, you know, he starts hitting. Because he finished, although he was my boyhood hero, he finished playing a couple of years before I got there. And I never actually, you know, talked to him. I, you know, saw him around occasionally. Never even dared to go up to talk. He was hitting balls for a fairly long time there, not badly either, for a 77-year-old gentleman. So I went over and talked to him. Well, very gracious. He didn't really remember me, but I told him 20 years ago. And I asked him about Crescenti, and he said that he saw him occasionally looking out the stock. They were actually teammates.
Right.
Oh, Crescenti was, then there was the infamous or famous Jim Turner, who was the pitching coach.
Right.
And the power behind the throne, the Eminence Grease of, you know, he thought he was the unofficial manager. And he was a very pushy, kind of intruded into a lot of areas and probably was just soundly disliked by the pitchers, people like Whitey Ford and by Mantle, But he was a, you know, he was a very serious, very professional coach. No old drinking buddies of the manager. Of course, was one of the better drinkers in any league at the time.
Well, the Yankees always had a reputation of having coaches for the purpose of coaching. Many of the boys on the other teams I've spoken with, especially the pitchers, said that the coaching just didn't exist. They were.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think that's being probably quite inaccurate. There were a lot of good pitching coaches around, and there were several after Turner, like Johnny Sain, who was actually. There's a very nice guy. We just had an autograph signing up in June of New York. And boy, he's in terrific shape.
I understand, and he has not spoken with him. Tom, hang on. Somebody's calling. Let me see if I can get it. Hang on just a second, please. Hello? No. I don't know why I can never pick up on an incoming call when I've got the recorder on, but I never can.
Sometimes some of the machinery disconnects and we have call four and it doesn't work when we're on. We have one wireless phone.
What I know about the workings of telephones would not fill the head of a pen. So, I've got a book coming out in the spring. It's called The Case For. It's about people who are not in the Hall of Fame and who should be. And Johnny Sain's got a chapter, and I talked with him a couple of times. And he is just maybe not the most educated man I've ever spoken with, but about as nice a man as I've ever talked
That's
with.
That's right. He's a real gentleman, and he was a great pitcher. Really knows craft. Of course, spent a long time getting regular. I'm amazed at the kind of he looks very little change. I remember, 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Some of them keep it, and some of them don't.
Yeah.
You mentioned Casey Stengel three times.
Yeah.
Your reputation of not paying any attention to the players who couldn't help him. Was this the case?
Well, Casey was, we don't have enough time to discuss this guy. He was a very, very complex man. He was very different from his newspaper image, which, was a, this guy was a master of public relations before it became popular.
Right.
He manipulated the press before it was popular. And, the good-natured, amiable clown image that he had, he was much darker figure than that, and a much more intelligent figure than that. He was an alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
He used to drink his riders into the ground. He had an incredible memory for everything but names. And, really, really, his thing believes was a fact. But he liked me. I mean, he liked holler guys, and I was kind of a holler guy. And he liked the idea that I was kind of, had kind of a work ethic. Didn't like me, too. And so he liked, guy that, type of ball player that Billy Martin was.
Right.
Okay, the kind of guy that scratch and fight, holler and kick, and always thinking, always chattering, and not the most talented guy in the world, So he liked me more than he should have. And was always very kind in print to me and never gave me, you know, never gave me any. Probably did, kind of ignored me, but I didn't get any harassment. I saw him, you know, fairly cruel to a lot of up-and-coming players who were being sent back to the minors only because the Yankees were so overstocked with talent. Dark side of the street to where he handled these guys. And, he had a tremendous ego.
Yeah, I bet.
He used to refer to the team by the personal pronoun.
Yeah, that is a pretty good ego.
Well, you're not, you know, he was not a, he's a great teacher. And a lousy game manager. And often falling asleep on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And Turner used to make A, the decisions on pitching rotation, and B, largely the decisions on Yankees pitchers, which, you know, sort of the basic, I mean, that is the most basic power that manager
has. Yeah, that's managing.
He was kind of the older players there when I joined the club, Rizzuto and Bauer and people like this, particularly Bauer was one of the people affected, always felt that they would have won the pennants by bigger margins in the early 50s than they did if the platooning system hadn't been in effect. I don't know that that was so, but that was there. Sort of consensus.
Right.
He was the guy that, of course, really brought the money in big way.
Yeah.
Just automatic, sort of orthodox.
Well, it was always big news back then. I'm about 5 years younger than you, so I remember that time pretty well. And Stengel's platoon was talked about as if nobody else ever did it.
Well, you know, the difference was you replaced the Hank Bauer with Gene Woodling and
right.
Irv Noren. I mean, you know, if you can put a guy up from the other side of the plate who's also a 300 hitter, it, you know, it makes you get a lot smarter and a lot faster.
Makes it pretty easy.
Yeah.
Well, your second year, you played, as you said, you played some more. Evidently, getting the bat and the ball in the same place at the same time is not a problem for you. You hit the ball and hit, heck, you had a 350 average after 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when you went in the military service?
No, I played at Richmond the next year.
57?
Yeah.
How long did you spend in the minor leagues? You went to Kansas City eventually, but how long did you play all together?
I played 2 full years in the minors, 57, 58. Then 59, and, you know, one of these things that I was told, I was in the Army that winter and got to spring training late after George Blythe threatened me with coming off, you know, national service with fining me if I wasn't in shape. If I wanted to discuss my contract or anything like that. And having gotten the spring training, I had played a lot in spring training before, in fact, the two before that. And I didn't play at all, virtually. And they started making cuts, and I had had a pretty good year in AAA and AA, and then back to AAA. But it was obvious I had, you know, absolutely, you know, it was not going to be on the Yankee roster, it was not going to play, it was not going to make the team. And I was figuring out, you know, which AAA team am I going to go to? And they started cutting the roster, and I figured I'd be among the first cuts, and I wasn't. And then the second, third, and fourth cuts were made, I still wasn't. And Bob Turley, who was a player representative, said, you know, said, I don't think they can cut you this year. We're supposed to be, you know, these vagaries of baseball law. Nobody knew what, you know, waivers and options and all that kind of thing then. And you're supposed to have, be able to be waived, be optioned out 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had been in the majors 2 years on the bonus rule that I had been optioned 57 to Richmond and optioned 58 to Denver. So I figured, and being able to count to three, barely, one, two, three, I can be optioned a third time that year. But Turley suggested to me that he believed that I couldn't be optioned without getting waivers on it, because a year in the majors counted as an option.
Hmm.
Well, by that rationale, since I had 2 years, you know, I couldn't get there from here, because if a year in the majors counted as an option, I could have been optioned only in 57 and not in 58. We were in 59. If it didn't count, then I could be optioned, so
right.
Maybe it counted a half, I don't know. But anyway, that apparently was the case. So I came north with the club and the season opened and played the Red Sox. Still in the club. And then that Sunday, which was I think about the third day of the season, I was running before the game out in the outfield. A man called me in and told me I'd been traded to Kansas City.
Hmm. How'd you feel about that?
Well, mild shock.
Yeah, I bet.
Never having been traded before. But I mean, I wasn't as shocked by that as I was shocked at not being sent to a minor league team early, much earlier in the spring training.
Now, people, the options and the waiver rules and all those, that general managers are still screwing up on that today. That must be a very difficult rule to grasp somehow.
It's not very difficult. I mean, if you can count to three, but the point is that these rules are constantly violated and evaded, at least were in the old days, and they kept changing the rules that this tight little club had made up of owners. I mean, it was a cartel.
Yeah.
They had their own rules and then found that they couldn't live with them, and in a competitive situation, we'd cheat on them. And it would be like, playing a game of poker and deciding because some guy had four-flushed that four-flushes were okay now.
Yeah.
And then going a couple of, more rounds and then deciding that three-flushes were okay. And they did a lot of that,
That was a good old boy, network back then. It's not quite so much today.
Yeah. Well, at one point, when my original Major League contract ran out, which was, I guess, fourth year, they offered me a cut. I was still on a Major League contract, and they offered me a cut that was more than 25% of what my major league salary was. And I gently pointed this out to him in negotiation, just because I, had been reading the sporting news since I was 9 years old and had been aware of this provision. Not that there was anybody there to explain it to you or something. I gently pointed out, I said, isn't that a violation? And they allowed, as this was this was Lee McPhail, who was gentleman. He was the farm director at the time. He was later president Mary Williams. And he was a gentleman, so a very courtly type. He allowed it. See, maybe that was so. Now, would that be acceptable? Which I was trying to figure out, was this a flim flam?
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, it was just outrageous, the stuff that went on in the old days. The meager amount of money that the established stars on the Yankees made those days. It's just a joke. The pendulum swung from one extreme to another.
Yeah, it seems to have overswung. Somehow it's got to get back to the middle.
You know, those guys like Scourin who were, you know, tearing up the league. I mean, they were making $20,000 to $25,000.
Yeah. And the club was telling they're broke.
And they were telling all those guys like Blanchard, you know, who were just tearing the cover off the ball, you know, high minors that, you know, go back out and hit 300 again.
Yeah. Maybe we'll look at you next year.
one of my friends, a guy named Zeke Bella, who was up for a cup of coffee a couple of times with the Yankees. One time he had hit about 370 Binghamton before Kansas City, but he was a career 300 and never hit less than 300. And Stengel was sending him out again because Stengel said, "Now you go down there and you hit 300. He said, I hit 300. So.
Well, where did you go? You went to Kansas City. What happened at that point?
I sat on the bench there behind Joe DeMaestri. And they sat there on the bench for about half the season. And they had trouble getting me waived out of me. And eventually got waivers on me and sent me to Charleston, the American Association. And I was down there playing 2 weeks, and I got beat by Steve Rizek in the hospital.
And how long did you play from that point? Was it a serious beating? Obviously in the hospital.
I was in the hospital, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, knocked out several keys. And I guess I was out of action about 2 weeks. Then I went out to Portland, Pacific Coast League, and played the rest of the year out there. And that was 59. And then in 60, I played in the American Association game at Dallas, and well, at half the season in Dallas, and the second. I got married that winter, so I was married that year. And still had 2 semesters to go to get my degree from Notre Dame. And I went back to college and was completing the fall semester. I got a contract for AA from Kansas City. I had played 8 weeks in the Southern League. 57 and 58, and made the all-star team, so I got recalled back to Denver, Triple A, where I started the year. So I thought that was a very bad sign. I was sort of necessarily going sideways, I was going down. So I decided to the athletic says to stay in school for the spring semester. They came back and said, okay, we'll do that. We'd like you to play since college, 8 years old. But meanwhile, I thought I better, you know, I started applying to government agencies. So I decided to take the government up on the coming. Graduated, I actually went to summer camp, which I had to go to military.
And that was the baseball career?
That was the baseball
career. Well, I asked you a question, maybe hard to answer. Well, yeah, this will be easy to answer, but I'm going to follow it up with a little harder one.
Yeah.
What is your opinion of the bonus rule?
Of the what?
The bonus rule. What's your opinion?
Oh, the bonus rule was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
ridiculous for everybody, including, you know, for the teams, for the ball players that kept out of the majors, well, bonus players here, for the bonus players themselves. I'm convinced that, who knows, but I think I would have had a much better chance of having a, of being a major leaguer if I had been able to start off. I think I could have started very high because, you know, I didn't have a bad year in Richmond in AAA.
The next question, if you thought it hurt you. A lot of guys can't answer that, but I think you did pretty well.
Oh, yeah, I think it did. I think not playing for that that period of time, 2 years, is very harmful at that age, at that stage of development.
Sure.
I learned a lot. I think, in some ways, it wasn't all a lost cause. I know Jerry Coleman was kind enough to tell me in 56 in spring training, I played quite a bit in spring training and had a good spring training. Got a couple of extra base hits. He had never seen anybody that improved from 1 year to the next, which is what I had.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I don't know if it's even true.
That sounds good. Makes you feel good.
That's the thing. I'm the third youngest player to have ever appeared in a World Series game.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you're eight, I was 19 3 weeks, I think. Go out there and you know everybody in the country is watching you because you've been watching these guys as a kid and it was a big deal. Series, go out there and catch a run and you're scared to death.
Sure.
But, you're scared that you're a screw up and the Tigers had offered. I did turn down bonus to go to college. It was kind of interesting. I didn't get a lot of advice. And my father really wasn't terrifically well situated to give a lot of very knowledgeable advice. But guidance counselors, people that I talked to, it was kind of amazing that maybe I talked to two or three people in that category in high school. And I already had lots and lots of college scholarships. I had already decided that I wanted to go to Notre Dame. And it was, that was a nice piece of change. Full scholarship for you. But it was, chicken feed compared to what the cost now.
Oh, yeah.
But it was interesting to me that and $30,000, $40,000 was a lot of.
Sure.
But it was interesting to me that these two or three people that I talked to that I gave weight to what they said were unanimous that go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I signed not to grab the money, and not because I was afraid of getting hurt or anything. I grabbed the money because of that rule.
Okay. That's right, you said that. That's a little different than the typical story of the bonus baby.
No, that's absolutely what motivated me to do it.
Rather than wait until you were 21 or 22?
My plan had been to go to college, play college ball, play semi-pro ball in the summer, and sign at the end of my junior or probably my junior year. In other words, sign when I was... I was young going to college. I had it all figured out that I couldn't wait to take one, so it was too late to start. Your apprenticeship is minors, kind of thing. But I figured that it was around, 19. I didn't want to be in a position where I was definitely sitting there and not being able to sign until I got going.
Did they ever pass that? They never did pass that rule, did they?
It was passed. It was in effect, but I think that it was, not ratified or was jerked. I mean, it was a dead letter very soon, within the year.
I know, let's see, what year was it? 1959. I had completed a year of college, and the Giants approached me. And they talked about, did I want to finish college or did I want to play ball? As it turned out, it didn't matter what I wanted to do because they didn't sign me. But there was talk about, like they were thinking about maybe they couldn't do it, but then it was all right after all or something. It was very difficult. I never didn't understand it fully.
Yeah.
I was sitting there hoping they'd offer me something, and they never did. So I didn't pay as much attention perhaps as I could have to the situation. But I know this similar thing was talked about, and that's a few years after it was talked about with you.
Yeah. Listen, I'm in a situation. I just came home from work, and I haven't eaten.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
She should have told me to shut up.
My wife is making frantic signals.
My wife does that a lot, too. Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean just to interrupt your dinner. We've about covered it all. You've answered all my questions and answered them.
I haven't started it, but... Yeah. I'm going off on a trip in the morning, too. I'm stopping in New York for 2 days, and I'm going to Brazil for...
Okay, well, I'm going to be in Jamaica for 2 weeks, so we can't talk for 2 weeks anyhow.
Well, why don't you come through here on your way back?
The flying, I go down there 2 or 3 times a year. I'm a veterinarian, and I go down there to consult on some horse farms. And I've always flown through Atlanta to Miami to Kingston. And this time they fly me from Atlanta to Kingston. I've never done that before. I assume it's a new flight. And I looked at the tickets because I was talking to the people down there, and I'm doing the same thing coming back. I wanted to stop off in Miami and visit some friends, and that's not the way the thing is set up.
Yeah. What airline are you flying?
Pardon?
What airline are you flying?
Delta out of here. I'm in Lexington, Kentucky, and then Air Jamaica from Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of my knowledge, Air Jamaica...
The Jamaican government resigned today.
You're kidding.
No, the entire government, whole kit and caboodle.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, there's a scandal involving Shell Oil.
There's a constant scandal down there involving something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We do, we do overseas risk assessments. In fact, I did a special assessment on Jamaica for Kentucky Fried Chicken, which... His government resignation just knocked his cock down.
The first sign I saw when I got off a plane, the first time I went down to Jamaica years ago, I figured I'd see all these exotic things. The first sign I saw in the airport was Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah.
I was amazed.
Yeah, well, the whole purpose of this was they were trying to make a decision on whether they were going to reinvest some of their profits there.
So we have no... I wonder if I'm going to be welcome down there. That's really, really strange. Let me... If I can, then I've got a couple more questions, not so much about the bonus, but about a few other things. Call you maybe the middle of the month?
Yeah, back from Brazil around the 15th.
Okay, well, that's when I'm getting back.
Yeah, so you call me that weekend, I think, 15th.
Okay.
I should be back.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Tom, thank you very much.
Okay.
Good night.
Nice talking.